Scholasticism can mean schoolism. And therefore, it can refer to the masters, to the books, to the curriculums, and to the attitudes of the medieval schools. It can attach, in other words, simply to what went on in the medieval schools. Yes, logic had an important place, but we can be saying, we can say more generally, it just applies to the schools. Now, the 12th century saw a progression, for example, from the great monastic schools, eventually to the great cathedral schools in Paris, at Chartres, and other places in France, to the dawning universities of Europe. More about those universities in a little while. Now, there were also certain teachers, Peter Abelard is a very good example, who attracted followers no matter where they were. Students came from all over Europe. Intellectual culture began to be a more international, it would probably be an exaggeration to say cosmopolitan, but certainly a more international phenomenon than had ever been the case before. Now, the scholastic method, in other words, if we talk about schoolism, involved the very close reading of set texts, coupled with the commentaries on those texts. So the teacher would, for example, take a text of Aristotle, would read out a short passage, would explain any difficult or complex words, would then read to the students one or another of the great commentaries on that particular passage. The teacher would then offer his own views. There were important women intellectuals, but not formally speaking women teachers. The teacher would offer his own views, perhaps wrap up any problems, and then read the next piece of the set text, and then go through the same process again and again and again. Now, there's something old and something new here. New, many of the texts themselves, particularly a lot of the Aristotle. New, the application of dialectical reasoning to reasoning out the problems, contradictions, difficulties of interpretation hiding in these texts. Old, however, was that for a very long time, scholars had normally taken the Bible and glossed it. Now, we say today, well, I'll put a gloss on that. In other words, I'm going to explain that to you. I'm going to offer my views on this. I'm going to offer a comment on this. Well, in the earlier Middle Ages, and we have large numbers of surviving manuscripts that look exactly this way, one would have taken a manuscript and written comments, either between the lines or in the margins of the page. Gradually in the 12th century, those glosses began to be separated from the text they glossed, and also in the 12th century, in other words, they began to be commentaries that are published separately, and then, moreover, the glosses were no longer applied particularly or exclusively to the works of Scripture or to the Church Fathers, but now perhaps to Aristotle, for instance. So, something old and something new. So we find that an old way of instruction was adopted, and changed. Now, scholasticism can also refer to a particular method of formal reasoning based on dialectical analysis. There were a number of scholars, for example, who began to tackle whole fields of knowledge in a systematic way, in ways that had never really been done before. Now, they either arranged their material according to certain systematic principles, or they set out and asked a series of questions and argued out possible answers to these questions. Let me give a couple of concrete examples to try to make this a little clearer. A monk from the city of Bologna, actually he worked and taught in Bologna, he was himself German, his name was Gratian. He began about 1140 to publish his Concordance of Discordant Canons. Well, we call this book the Decretum. But you notice, Concordance of Discordant Canons, a bit like Abelard's Sic et Non. What this was is a rational, topical, systematic presentation of the law of the church that sought to reconcile contradictions, to reconcile unclarities. It founded in many ways the science, we might say the jurisprudence, of canon law. But the point is now that the law of the church was organized systematically. Even clearer as an example of this kind of work is the Book of Sentences, or the Books of Sentences, four books, by the scholar Peter Lombard. The Lombard was born about 1100, died in 1160. He taught in Paris. Now, what is a sentence? A sententia, in Latin, is a conclusion reached at the end of a process of logical reasoning. Now, what does logical reasoning look like? It works through what are called syllogisms. Now, everyone is familiar with certain basic syllogisms, whether we're really aware of it or not. We may take a very simple but effective example. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is mortal. The conclusion Socrates is mortal is a sententia. It comes at the end of a process of reasoning. And in that process of a reasoning, I must array my premises correctly. I must draw valid and not invalid conclusions.